5. The next afternoon, San Justo came into Itale's room with a special edition of the Courier Mercury, a single sheet, printed, since the government presses had been burned on the night of the 13th, on some commandeered press, perhaps Novesma Verbis. The paper contained no news from Paris, nothing about suspension or reconvocation of the assembly, nothing directly about any event of August 13th and 14th, only a bulletin dated the 12th, of the Grand Duchess's request to the Estates General, and a police notice to certain individuals considered illegal residents of the capital, who were hereby ordered to depart the Molson province by noon of the 16th August, 1830, after which time, if found in the city or province, they would be liable to arrest and imprisonment as conspirators against the government of the Grand Duchy. There followed, in smudged, badly set print, a list of 63 names. San Justo read them out, hesitating and squinting, his foreign accent very noticeable. Breve, Jivan Alexis. Rassene, Luke. Yagove, Pierre Maria. Brelevai, Tomas Alexis. Fabre, Raoul. Freinen, Jivan. They're out of date, Itale remarked. San Justo went on. 20 or more names Itale knew as acquaintances, and some he did not know at all. Then, Oragan, Stefan Maria. Oragan? And the first deputy? Is Livene on the list?
Count Hellescar has heard that Livene was killed on Palazzai Street.
Go on.
Palais, Tedor. Palais Salvate. Vernoy, Rach. Sorde, Itale. Eclesai, Matthias Mark. Chorin Falescar, George Andre.
Another deputy. San Justo finished reading the list. There was a pause.
Carantai is not on it, he said.
No. The old count had kept his servants out collecting what news they could and bringing it to him and his two refugees. Carantai was said to have been seriously hurt in the fighting on Palazzai Street. There was no report at all of Brelevai or young Vernoy.
Even Oragan under ban, Itale said. That's a blow. He spoke rather unnaturally.
He was sitting up in bed, one of the mighty beds of the Hellescar house, with great goose-feather coverlets and curtains like the stage curtain of the opera. He looked haggard and meager, as if he had lost weight again and even height.
You should get out of Krasnoy at once, San Justo said. There will be no pardons henceforth.
If only I could get some word of Brelevai.
He will be in hiding or in jail. You can't wait to hear of him. You have only 24 hours.
Will you come with me?
I'm not on this list.
You may be on another.
Almost certainly I am.
San Justo spoke with composure.
I'll wait a little, he said, until all is quieter, and then go back to France.
I'm going home. Come with me, for a while at least.
Thank you, my friend. At a better time, when hospitality is not dangerous to the hosts, I shall come with great pleasure.
As a favor to me. You can't try to cross the border now. You can get to France later when things have quieted down. Of course, you'll want to go there. It's all over here. There's nothing for you to stay here for. But it's not safe to try to leave the country now. You can lie low in the mountains a while. We came out of this together. If I can keep you from getting arrested, it's one thing I can do. There's nothing else. Let me...
Very well. I will come with you.
San Justo broke in on the accelerating rush of words. Itale stopped, drew in his breath, and said, Good. They were silent a while. San Justo was profoundly relieved, but could not express his relief. If the stages are running as usual, the Southwestern Post leaves every second Friday, and the Esnar Post the next Saturday. This is, what, the 15th? It would be the Post this week. 3 days to wait, then, and I don't think we can wait here.
San Justo shook his head. We can walk. How far is it?
Not much over 100 miles.
But we must start at once to be outside this province tomorrow.
San Justo's injured hand had been bound up and the arm put in a light sling to help immobilize it. You can't walk 100 miles with that, Itale said in self-disgust, looking at the sling.
Oh, I think so. But you, I think you're not well enough, Itale.
The Count will lend us horses to Fontanasferai, 10 miles or so. It's in the Parana.
We can walk from there or wait there for the coach.
Good. Have you any money?
They stared at each other. I have some change, I think.
In my room at the inn, I have a few kroner, but I don't want to go there. It's a risk.
No, don't go there. The Count will lend us enough to get home with. My God, what a fool I am.
Itale rubbed his hands over his face and his still short, rough hair with a laugh. The danger, the absurdity, and the hopelessness of his situation were, at this moment, both clear and meaningless to him. The important thing just now was that he not lose this friend, this brave, amiable man, along with all the rest and the others lost. That San Giusto not be arrested. This was as far as his mind would go. He could consider his own risk only in terms of San Giusto's, incapable of directly facing the possibility of himself being rearrested, re-imprisoned. He had no hesitation at all asking Count Hellescar for the loan of horses and money, and he joked with the old man, who was reluctant to let his refugees go. Old Hellescar longed to defy the entire Austro-Hungarian Empire to trouble the guests of his house. He argued that neither of them was fit to travel, and that the police would never look for them, here under an old soldier's roof. "Discretion is the entire extent of my valor, Count," Itale said. "We'll run while the running's good. Tell George when he comes home, I think he'll applaud my variety of valor." Itale had got up in the late afternoon and dressed in the worn clothes, the old blue coat, that were now his sole possessions. He held himself very straight to convince Hellescar and himself of his fitness. From time to time he wondered at how he managed to stand up and walk when he felt so deathly tired, how he arrived at decisions when he could not keep two ideas in order in his head, how he talked and laughed when all the time there was in the back of his throat the tightness of unpermitted tears. From moment to moment he expected this specious vigor to run out, in which case he would no doubt fall flat on his face as he had done last night, and he wished earnestly that he could give up, cast it from him as one tosses away a pebble, and lie down and rest. There was no more use in it, no point, no direction, but it made no difference. His thoughts and acts stayed chained to that rock of identity, of single, unmoved, unreasoning will, the will to remain himself. Once their course was decided, he and San Giusto had agreed that promptness would best serve both their own interest and their host's. So he rode, with San Giusto and a couple of Hellescar grooms, down Tiponti Street, past the trees of the park and the silent Sinalia Palace, past the coachyard at West Gate, past the hotel where he had met Louisa, past the tenements and through the northwestern suburb, out onto the plain that lay dun and gold in the light of summer evening, and on towards the hills. From the road above Colonamana, they looked back at the city on the curve of the river, a faint scattering of points of light in the wide gray twilight, so delicate it seemed one could take it up in the hand like a piece of silver gauze. They rode on, upward. Remote in the sky over bare hilltops, the crescent moon hung for a while. It had set when they reached Fontana's Ferrai. The air here, 1,000 feet above the river valley, was cool. Gulhelm Street was lit softly with colored lanterns, fantastic among tree shadows. A few strollers passed. Open carriages rolled by. They put up at the first inn they came to.
"It looks expensive," Itale said. But San Giusto said, "We will find one cheaper tomorrow," and he did not argue.
He had noticed as he rode that his horse's ears seemed at times far off, yards away, and at other times very near. The same was true of the stars, which now drew off together in a clump in the enormous barren sky, and now came up so close that he felt the cold prickle of their fire under the skin of his forehead and cheeks. A troubling sensation. They were given a room under the eaves, the only room he had free, said the innkeeper. The resort was full of vacationers escaping the heat of the city.
"Yes, it is quite warm in Krasnoy," San Giusto said.
As soon as the man left, Itale lay down and closed his eyes. San Giusto, in intense discomfort from his injured hand, swore a little. He asked some question, but Itale did not answer. He was not asleep yet, and wanted to speak to San Giusto, but could not speak. He was nearly asleep and comfortable enough now that he could lie down, only very deep within him, at the depth below dream, the depth where he had lived for 2 years of solitary confinement, something remained stone hard, mute in anguish. Everything was over, finished, gone. Only nothing was finished, nothing was done. And he must go on, go back, go home, into exile. He lay still and saw before him in the darkness of his closed eyes the great, quiet slopes of the mountains above the reflecting lake.